Welcome, everyone, to Jewish History Soundbites. This is Yehuda Geber with another episode of Jewish History Soundbites, and in part two of our Washington Heights, Great American Jewish Cities episode has been generously sponsored in memory of Chaim ben David v'Reyosai, Moshe Mordechai ben Tzvi v'Reyosai. And continuing to say a little more of the stories that I heard also from Rabbi and Rebbetzin Schechter that I mentioned in part one, a few more of their stories and a few other stuff that I found also interesting to share. We were left off in part one about the Reb Breuer's yeshiva, the yeshiva's Rabbeinu Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, and Rabbi Schechter recounted some memories he had of the original Rosh Yeshiva there, Naftali Friedler. Said it was a very lovable individual. The people were captivated. They loved him. Very influential. The Balabatim loved him. Very interesting custom that Rabbi Naftali Friedler did was that he gave a shiur on Shabbos afternoon to the parents of the student body. And he would give a shiur on whatever the yeshiva was learning. He would give a shiur on the material that the yeshiva students had studied during that week. He would give to the parents on Shabbos afternoon, and the reason he did so was to be able to teach the parents the yeshiva shatayra that the kids are learning. In this way, the parents would be able to relate to the kids, the parents would be able to study with the kids, and a very innovative idea, educational idea. Now, he was so beloved by the community that he was next in line. He was going to be the one to take over a Breuer. There seemed to be no question about it. An interesting turn of events took place is that he received an offer from Gateshead to come to the yeshiva in England. And he understood the offer as to be that he would sit and learn and maybe teach, but be completely devoted to his studies, and it would enable him to grow as a Talmud Chacham. And he decided it sounds like a great prospect to be able to be completely immersed in Torah study. And Rav Breuer said, if you go, you won't be able to come back. We're not holding your position here. So I say, don't go. So Rav Naftali Friedler decided to ask Rav Moshe Feinstein. And Rav Schechter told me this maisa. And, excuse me. And Rav Moshe said to him, well, your own growth as a Talmud Chacham comes first. If you understand that the offer from Gateshead is for you to be able to sit and learn in peace and you'll grow, so then therefore you should definitely take the offer under those conditions. So he left Washington Heights. He went to Gateshead. He lost his position in Breuer's. And when he arrived in Gateshead, it turned out that the whole thing was a mekach tos. It was a mistake, a misunderstanding, and his position there was going to be involved in fundraising in an administrative sense, and definitely not something he anticipated or was interested in altogether. So after a month or two, he came right back to America, and the yeshiva didn't hold his position like Rav Breuer said, and they had given it already to the next Rosh Yeshiva, who turned out to be the Novominska Rebbe. So instead, Rav Naftali Friedler became Rosh Yeshiva in Neri Yisrael in Toronto. Later on, he actually was in Muncie. He ironically became the Rav of the KJ community, the branch of KJ that was open there in Muncie, which also didn't work out. He left that position, and they hired someone else. And in fact, when I grew up in Muncie, I remember Naftali Friedler, a very distinguished individual. And since he happens to be buried right near Abel Yashiv on Har HaMenuchos in Yerushalayim, so I sometimes bring groups there when we tour Har HaMenuchos. I bring them to Rav Naftali Friedler, this amazing individual's kever. So, like I said, the Novominska Rebbe, the future, then he wasn't the Novominska Rebbe, he takes over as the Rosh Yeshiva in Breuer's. And in fact, in honor of the recent 40th Yahrzeit of Rav Breuer, so they interviewed really shortly, days or maybe weeks before his passing, unfortunate passing. They interviewed Novominska Rebbe in honor of Rav Breuer's 40th Yahrzeit, a beautiful video. interview where he says his stories about Reb Royer and also his relationship with him. And amazing that someone who grew up as a Kutzkerainikel, he said that he took to Reb Royer as a wise person and took to the community, the Yekke community, and actually would come to ask advice and his etzes by Reb Royer. That was the what the Novi Minsk Rebbe says. So he was the Rosh Yeshiva there for a bunch of years, and he takes over, of course, the Shabbos afternoon shiur to the parents. You know, during his tenure there, the Novi Minsk Rebbe was ill. He was sick for something, and the doctor said that he was something in his throat and some sort of medical condition. And this story also Rabbi Schechter told me. And the Novi Minsk Rebbe wasn't able to talk for an entire year. So he's a Rosh Hashiva. How could he not talk? So during the week, he distributed worksheets with questions. He wrote on the chalkboard. What about the Shabbos shiur? What's he going to do Shabbos afternoon? He can't exactly distribute worksheets to the parents, and he definitely can't write on the chalkboard. So he asked Reb Herschel Schechter to substitute for him to give the Shabbos afternoon shiur. So whatever the Breuer's yeshiva was learning, so Reb Schechter would give the shiur to the Yekesh HaBal HaBatim, the lay community, parents of the student body of the yeshiva, and he kept it going. Even after the Novi Minsk Rebbe got better, he asked Rabbi Schechter to continue, and he actually gave that shiur for 10 years. When the Novi Minsk Rebbe was the Rosh Yeshiva there, he lived in Washington Heights, and Reb Breuer told him, "You're not allowed to wear a shtreimel in Washington Heights in public. This is a Yekke community, Minig Frankfurt. In Frankfurt, we didn't wear shtreimels." So the Novi Minsk Rebbe only wore it at home, so you shouldn't forget what a spadik looks like, and he didn't walk around the streets. I remember hearing from an elderly Hasidic Jew that when he was a Talmud of Lakewood in the 1960s or 70s, so Reb Schneer Cutler did not encourage wearing a shtreimel. He was one of the only Hasidish married couples in Lakewood at the time. It's not another fellow. And he wasn't allowed to wear a shtreimel in the streets of Lakewood either. And I don't know if shtreimels have made it to Washington Heights yet, but I think they've made it to Lakewood at this point. So the arrangement with the yeshiva was there was another shul in the neighborhood called the Aguda. Now, I don't know if they were affiliated with Agudas Yisrael. As it happens, the KAJ community was very closely affiliated with Agudas Yisrael. Of course, it was Frankfurt Baal HaBatim, along with Reb Shlomo Breuer, who founded Agudas Yisrael. And the Polish and Litvaks only came along later, although they might not want to tell you that. So they were the founders. Of course, they were very involved in Agudas Yisrael. There's Agudas Yisrael branch in the KAJ community. And of course, all the rabbis there and the Baal HaBatim were very involved in the Aguda. But there was also a shul in the neighborhood called Aguda. And whoever was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Breuer's Yeshiva also had the rabbinate of the Aguda Shul. That was the arrangement. So the Novi Minsk Rebbe was the rabbi in the Aguda Shul. Now, Rabbi Schechter told me that he davened for a couple of years in the Aguda Shul, a couple of years that he did not daven in the yeshiva in YU, but he davened in the Aguda, which was closer to the side of the neighborhood. And one Shabbos morning, they found, which happens sometimes, a mistake in the Sefer Torah. So they put it back and they take out a new Sefer Torah. So the Novi Minsk, the future Novi Minsk Rebbe, the Rav of the Shul, said the Mishnah Berurah says a chumrah that you should reread 7 aliyahs again from the second Sefer Torah. And then they went ahead and they read the 7 aliyahs. As it happens, it was Parshas Hazinu. And in Parshas Hazinu, for some reason, again, Rabbi Schechter explained to me the halacha, and sometimes during the conversation we had, he digressed into the Lamdas and the Vritayr and everything. That's when I lost him. So this was one of those times. And he said, for some reason, by Parshas Hazinu, you do not redo the 7 aliyahs because Hazinu is supposed to be read as one unit or whatever it is, because it's Shira, because it's Hazinu. And the Novi Minsk Rebbe realized that Shabbos afternoon, that he had made a mistake, that they were not supposed to read the 7 aliyahs again when they took out the second Sefer Torah. Now, if he didn't, now, Rabbi Schechter says, no one would have noticed. It was regular, simple Baal HaBatim in the shul. They trusted him. No one would have noticed. But the Novi Minsk Rebbe was very intellectually honest. And you know how many rabbis would have done this. But by Mincha, he gave a bang on the bima, and he said, I want everyone to know that I made a mistake this morning. And even though normally the Mishnah Berurah has a chumrah that if you take out a second Sefer Torah, you're supposed to read seven aliyahs, but not by Parshas Ha'azinu, and it was a mistake. I shouldn't have done that. That was an incredible greatness of the Nava Minsker Rebbe. He was someone who the local community connected very much to, and they used to ask eitzes, they used to ask for advice and speak to him. Now Rav Breuer also would give shiurim to the community. He gave, like I said in part one, he gave in High German, he gave three nights a week, Navi and other topics, and Rav Shimon Schwab would give shiurim, would give drushes to the community, and Rav Shechter said how Rav Schwab, he loved Rav Schwab's drushes. They were works of art. He said he would read a medrash, he would read a chazal, and then he would translate it into English. But he said most people didn't realize that he wasn't translating it. He was interpreting it. He was giving a pirush. He was saying a whole thing. And it was beautiful. The way Rav Schwab would speak and the depth of his speech and the clarity. And it was really, really something to enjoy and experience. Now, the other side of the neighborhood, of course, was Yeshiva University. And many of the rabbeim in the yeshiva would live local in those days. One of the prominent rabbeim who lived locally was Rav David Lifshitz, and who's the Suval Karov, and also came to America on a visa of Rav Revel in the beginning of the war. And Rav Lifshitz, I remember his daughter, Rabbi Shalamis Kamenetsky, Rav Nassim's wife, told me about her father and how they escaped, and she was a little girl then, she remembered, and that they came to the Heights. And so he lived in the neighborhood. And not only that, but there were a lot of Balabatim who lived on the other side of the neighborhood in those days. Today it's again a resurgence. There is a new growth in the community there. And he had a shul. Rav Lifshitz had a shul that was independent of the yeshiva. It was local laymen, local Balabatim who had a shul. And he was the rav of that shul today. You know, those Balabatim eventually moved out of the city. And was eventually the neighborhood changed, became more non-Jewish, Dominicans, Puerto Rican, and then the gentrification of the neighborhood in recent years. A lot of young families, YU families, Kyle families, moved in also in the neighborhood. So, you know, a lot of dynamic demographic changes going on in the neighborhood as well. So in any event, Rabbi Shechter said that when he was in the yeshiva, so he decided that when he's going to be Shavuos in the yeshiva, I believe he was still single at the time, and he decided he's going to eat in yeshiva, going to be completely in the yeshiva for Shavuos, eat there, sleep there, learn there, only in yeshiva. And the yeshiva served a milchik meal, a dairy meal. So he was a little nervous, eating a dairy meal, and shyantif, he's supposed to have fleishiks. So he went to Reb David Lifshitz's house right across the street, and he asked him, what should we do? We had only milchiks the yeshiva served, should we also eat fleishiks? And he said, Rav Lifshitz said, Milchiks, you didn't eat a Yomtiv Suda yet. Come inside my house, sit down, I'm going to serve you Fleishiks. And he said they came and they had a whole Fleishik Suda by him. He said another Rebbe who lived across the street from Yeshiva was the Mashgiach of Bnei Yisrael Chonar, Gakumesh Lesson was a Slabotka, Talmud of the Altar. He said that he didn't really fit into America, you know, at all. He was in the world of Slabotka, in the world of Litta. But he also had an influence both in the yeshiva and the neighborhood. Everyone had commanded a lot of respect for Rav Soloveitchik himself, would have a tremendous amount of respect for Rav Lesson. And of course, whenever Rav Soloveitchik would fly in from Boston, he would also be in the neighborhood. Not only would he be in the neighborhood, he stayed in the dormitory in the yeshiva on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Those are the only 2 days a week he was in his days that he would be in the neighborhood. He gave two shiurim during that time, one a regular yeshiva shiur for the younger guys, the Gemara shiur, and then the other day was the smicha shiur in Yeridea Chulin, and it kept them busy all week. Each shiur was 2 hours. In those days the shiur was in Yiddish, and he said he belted out the shiur like a machine gun, and it was very fast paced, spoke fast. And they covered a lot. They covered a lot of ground, many, many blot. And therefore they had the whole week to prepare for his shiurim. Another Rebbe who was in the yeshiva at the time, but lived on the Upper West Side, who would come into the yeshiva, was Remendel Zaks. mean, he was the boychin, he tested the boys, he was also the substitute. And one morning a Rebbe would call in sick, he's not well. Reb Mendel Zaks would be called up. On his way to walking into the shir, he would say, what is this shir? What's this particular shir learning? Which mesechta? Which blot? And they would tell him, and then bam, he would have a shir just like that. And he would be able to say a whole shir. He also tested the boys when they came into the yeshiva. He would test them on things that he knew they wouldn't know. And he said, I'm doing it to sharpen your minds. I'm doing it to see that if you know how to think out of the box. Old school Litvak. And Rav Shachter said that one of the reasons he wanted to settle in the neighborhood when he got married, which wasn't that common, as a Koyel Ingeman, part of the yeshiva, was to be influential like a lot of his Rebbeim were in the neighborhood, to be part of the yeshiva in local, not to come in every day and to just learn there, and to be able to give shiurim there at night, which he had already been doing when he was single. And in fact, he said that a funny story when he was in Eretz Yisrael, about 20 years ago, it was Shemitah, so they went down to the Kaimamias to the Rav, Rav Mendelssohn, who was a pioneer. His father really was a pioneer with the Chazainish in Shemitah observance with farmers in Israel. So Rav Shechter was schmoozing with this Rav Mendelssohn, and he said, where are you? You live in Washington Heights. Oh, you're a Rebbe in YU. So Rav Mendelssohn, who, you know, is a Rav in Kaimamias, and he, you know, his father was close to the Chazanish, comes from really a different world. He said, I always heard about YU. And, you know, I heard it wasn't really a yeshiva because, you know, they have secular studies there. He said, but recently I was in Washington Heights and I was driving around the neighborhood and I saw these YU boys and they were wearing tzitzis and they were carrying sfarim and they looked like yeshiva boys. What changed? How did they change? I heard that, you know, it wasn't like such a, you know, an impressive place. That's what he asked Rav Shechter. So Rav Shechter decided to get him going. So he said, I'll tell you what changed. Zionism. He says, these Zionim, they started going from America to learn in Israel for a year after high school. And the parents were all into it for a year, or even more than a year. And when they're a year in Eretz Yisrael, they get much more into learning. They get devoted to learning. They become more frum. They come back to YU. They're knocking away and learning. And that's what changed the yeshiva. I don't know how much he appreciated that answer, but that was a funny exchange. One last YU story before we get back to the Yekis. This I heard many years ago from a Shechter, but he chazered it over last night again. He said that there was a guy who asked a question during Shir to Rav Soloveitchik, in the Smicha Shir. And Rav Soloveitchik didn't like the question. So he said, how do you not know that? Even the walls here know Yeridea by now. So the guy says back to Rav Soloveitchik, he says, the walls heard it 10 times. This is only my first time hearing it. So of course the walls know it better than me. And the reason I remember the story was because on Shabbos morning, during that Shabbos that I spent at the Shechter's, so Friday night we davened in Breuer, as I mentioned. Shabbos morning we went to the yeshiva. And I said, I want to see the walls that know Yeridea. That's one of the things I wanted to see. So I still don't know Yeridea till today, but at least I saw walls that know Yeridea. Now, one place where I remember from my wife's grandparents, that they said that the Yekis, you can't vacation in Washington Heights during the summer. It's very hot and very, you know, in general, it's crowded. It's a city. It's the edge of Manhattan, but it's still Manhattan. And they would all go up to Tannersville. That was there, the Yekis. That's where Rav Breuer himself. And there was really no non-Yekis in those days who went to Tannersville. It was really a very cliquey, kind of like what the neighborhood itself was, very cliquey, very, you know, protective about who they were. And again, in those days, it was a booming neighborhood. It was very strong, very large. The decline happened only much later. And so there weren't really any non-Yekis. At one point, Rabbi Shechter also went up there and there was a couple of Talmidim who came up with him and they learned every day on the porch. They learned Chulin. They studied together. And the Yekki Balabatim enjoyed seeing them learning. And they finished the whole Chulin over the 2 months of the summer. Rabbi Shechter and a couple of guys in the Balabatim were very excited. They're very impressed. they decided to sponsor a Fleishig Kiddush Shabbos morning, the last Shabbos of the summer, in honor of the Siyam of them finishing Chulin. At that point, it was already later on in Rav Breuer's life. He was already blind, and he was amazed that they had finished Chulin in 2 months. He spoke to them and learning a little bit, and he decided to speak at the Siyam. And he said, and this is again the world that Rav Breuer was. Rav Breuer lived till he was 98 years old. He lived through generations and generations. He belonged to another world. That was one of his greatnesses, that he was able to relate to the new world and speak to people of the next generation. But he said to Rabbi Shechter, he said, did you hear of this new sefer that came out, the Meshech Chochma? Now, the Meshech Chochma at that point was written by, of course, Rav Meir Simcha of Dvinsk, was written over 60 years before. But to Rav Breuer, who remembered when it came out, it was a new sefer. So he said, so Rav Shechter said, yeah, I heard of the sefer. Of the Meshech Chochma, the Har Sameach. So he said, he brings there a question that the Chasam Sefer asks about how do we know that Gershon is Gayer Kekotan Shenoyla Dami? How do we know that a convert is like a baby child that has just been born and does not have any blood relations to anyone? He's like a new creation, a new child, a new baby. That's what a convert to Judaism, that's the halachic status that he has. How do we know that? So the Meshech Chochma answers is that by Matan Torah, we just had a Shavuos now recently, it says, Shuvu lochem lo aleichem, you can go back to your wives. Now some of their wives were related to them, you know, because before Matan Torah, they were allowed to marry whoever they wanted. And here the Torah is permitting them to go back to their wives, even though their wives might have been cousins or whatever, any forbidden relations, kraivim. And they were not allowed to marry. So we see from here that Ger, Shenis Geir, all of them had the status of a Ger now. They were just born, and they're Kekatan Shenaylad. So they're allowed to marry someone who is genetically their relative, but halachically is not their relative because they all have the status of Gerim. That's what the Meshech Chochma apparently said. So Rav Breuer says, I want to tell you something. That it can't be that this, I can't believe such a pshat. You know why? Because how could he say that we lose all our kraivim? That means we lose our status as B'nai Avraham, Yitzchak, V'Yakov. We're no longer the children of the Avos. And how could we lose that father? And it can't be that this pshat is correct. We can't be a ger, shenis gair, because we have to be children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. That's how strongly Rav Breuer felt about that. In fact, there was a Hasidic Rebbe from Romania, Rabbi Yisrael Stein, who also came up to Tannersville, and he had the Hasidic custom of giving his grandchild, great-grandchild, an upshirin when he's 3 years old, of cutting his hair. So he went to Rav Breuer, who was the Rav, and he said, can you come and snip my hair? And Rav Breuer didn't know what he was talking about, the Yekis and the Litvaks and most European Jews, besides for Hasidim, don't do upshirin. And he's asking Rav Breuer to become a barber. But Rav Breuer was very gracious, very respectable, very classy. And he said, this is your custom, so I want to participate. And he went ahead and he snipped this little boy's hair. The Rav Shimon Schwab, when he was the Rav in the neighborhood, so the Yeki Frankfurt Minig, and I remember when my father-in-law was saying Kaddish for his parents, I remember he was very makpid on this custom, that you only one person says Kaddish at once. No two people. That's a lack of decorum, and you can't hear more than one person, and that's too wild for the Yekis. So only one person says Kaddish at once. A lot of people need to say Kaddish. Obviously, that was the original custom. Saying more than one Kaddish is a fairly new thing, and it happened, ironically, because of an epidemic. And a lot of people lost relatives, so Akiva Eger said that they should have more than one person saying Kaddish together. That's a different story. Maybe we'll talk about how customs developed in another episode. But in any event, so what they did in Breuer's in the shul was that they found opportunities to add a Kaddish, to have another Kaddish so that more people could say Kaddish. Because since only one person could say it once, if a few people had to say Kaddish, they tried to add on Kaddish. So Rav Shimon Schwab instituted that he said a halacha shir in the morning of Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. And after Kiddush Shulchan Aruch, someone would say Kaddish. Now, Rishon Shmuel was a real rav. He learned the simple halachas of Kiddush Shulchan Aruch, and they went through several halachas every day. He explained it to the Balabatim, and they finished the entire Kiddush Shulchan Aruch every single year. Then other Rabbanim, as Rav Shechter said, other Rabbanim, Kiddush Shulchan Aruch is too low. It's too simple a sefer. They do Mishnah Berurah with Bir Halacha, or they go into the Paiskim, or Shlomo Zalman, or Balyashiv. Said Rav Shimon Schwab, he understood that the best and the easiest is to give over the simple halacha to the community members, and that's the most practical, and that's how he led his kehila. Now, I mentioned that there was tension between the two communities, the Breuers, the KHA community, and the YU community. One of the ways that it expressed itself was about the Eruv. Now, there's no such thing as having a Jewish community somewhere where the Eruv is not an issue. So it's endemic to every community in the world. Either you have an Eruv or don't have an Eruv. And for sure, to have some sort of dispute in regards to the Eruv. So it's not unique to Washington Heights. But here, Rav Breuer was opposed to an Eruv, and Rav Shimon Schwab was opposed to the Eruv, and the members of the YU community wanted to make the Eruv. And eventually they did. And there was always a controversy about it. And eventually, when they were successful in building it, so that it ultimately brought young people to the neighborhood. Young people need to have strollers it's more attractive to come to the neighborhood. When in the early years, when the Yekis were the majority in the neighborhood of the Shomrei Shabbos community, so they there was no Eruv. Now, interesting enough, there was someone, actually, I remember the son from Muncie, where Shechter remembered the father, Mr. Grunebaum, the baker. He was actually a baker back in Frankfurt. And he said that he remembered that when Shlomo Breuer became the Rav after Shamshon Rafael Hirsch passed away, after his father-in-law, Rabbi Dr. Solomon Breuer, after his father-in-law, Rav Shamshon Hirsch, passed away. So he came to the community. The other community, the mainstream Orthodox community, the KAJ community, was, of course, the separatists, the Austrit. They separated. That was Rav Hirsch's position, that there's no compromise, there's no recognition of reform or any other stream of Judaism, so you can't be in the established community that recognized the legitimacy of the Reform Temple and the membership of the Reform Jews in the community, and therefore we have to separate and have our own community. That was Austrit, that Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch fought for, and that's, of course, a topic for another time. So Rav Breuer, or the original Rav Breuer, Rav Solomon Breuer, when he came to the community, so the other Orthodox community in Frankfurt had built an Eruv. So Rav Shlomo Breuer said, the Eruv is no good. So he said, why not? So he said, I'll teach you Eruvin as soon as I become the rabbi, and I'll explain to you why it's no good. So Mr. Grunebaum said that they learned Eruvin for 3 years with the Rav, with Rav Shlomo Breuer, and he said at the end of 3 years, he knew Eruvin, but he still did not know why the other Eruv was pasul, was no good. And presumably the reason was because of the fact that the other community in Frankfurt had built it, and perhaps that trickled down into the Washington Heights philosophy also. So you know, Rav Breuer, Rav Schwab, they were opposed to building an Eruv, and someone came to Rav Schwab and asked him, why not? Why can't we do it? They want to build an Eruv. So Rav Schwab said, Ich bin schon aus Rov. I'm already not the Rav. He's retiring. Rav Geli is coming. Rav Zecharia Geli. And you could ask him. He said, you should know that when I was a rabbi in Germany, I was a rabbi in a town in Bavaria, which the name escapes me. And we had an Eruv there. He said, over there, I was responsible for the Eruv. I took full responsibility for it. I checked it. And therefore it was possible. Here I can't take responsibility for it. Why? Because I can't take responsibility for the entire Manhattan. And if I have just for Washington Heights, then people will say, oh, they carry in Washington Heights. Rav Shimon Schwab says you could carry Washington Heights. That means he holds of the Eruv in Manhattan, and we could carry anywhere in Manhattan. So he doesn't want to take that type of responsibility. It's all or nothing. And Rav Geli asked Rav Shimon Schwab, what do you mean that ich bin schon ois rov? You meant that it's my responsibility now? You meant that you're not the rabbi anymore? What do you mean? You're still around. I'm just your assistant. So Rav Schwab clarified. He said, "What I meant to say was, as an expression, that you'll make an Erev here over my dead body." That's basically what I meant in more straight talk. So this the Erev remained a point of contention, and when people would carry their talis in the streets, so the members of the Yaki community would greet them by saying good yontif, because if it was yontif, then you're allowed to carry your talis. So presumably, if you're carrying your talis on Shabbos, that means that you hold that it's yontif. So that I guess that became that another issue on the topic of austrit. So Rabbi Schechter was once speaking in Eretz Yisrael, and he was schmoozing with Rav Ruderman afterwards. And he said, "Where do you live?" "Washington Heights, Rabbi in Yeshiva University." So he said, "Oh, it's nice to live with the Yekkes. The Yekkes are very nice people." He said, "You know, you have to deal with the fact that the Yekkes believe that the biggest mitzvah of all 613 mitzvahs is auster. It's sometimes a little rough to deal with, but other than that, it's fine." So that's a strong position that came all the way from Rav Hirsch. And then we come along to the development of the community, that the community grows and it becomes difficult to live in the city. In the 1980s, already started in the 70s, the 1980s, originally the Yekke Jews that came over, they lived in small apartments, it's small families, sometimes it was multi-generational, living in the same apartment. And when affluence grew and there were larger families and people wanted more space, people wanted a backyard for kids, so they wanted to move the community. There was a movement within the Kehillah to move the entire Kehillah to Orangeburg, New Jersey. Rav Schwab was opposed to it, and that became an issue. Rav Schwab has many speeches where he speaks, some of them are published, to try to keep the Kehillah together, to debating whether to move it altogether or to stay, or to try to, you know, stick it out inside Manhattan. Many of the young ones eventually decided they're moving to Muncie. And I heard from an older prominent Yaki or Muncie, who was started off in the Kehillah in Washington Heights, that Rav Schwab called him in when he heard that he's moving to Muncie, and he says, "Who gave you permission to leave?" He really fought for every individual to try to stay. There was even an attempt to open a branch in Paramus, New Jersey, and incredibly enough, they hired Rav Herschel Schechter to become the rabbi. And that became a branch of Breuer's. For 5 years, he was the rabbi. So Rav Schwab didn't want them moving out to Paramus. He also wasn't excited that they hired a YU rabbi to become the Rav there of a Breuer's Kehillah. The YU people didn't want to move out to Paramus because it was Frankfurt customs. It wasn't, you know, regular American communal customs. So they didn't grow. It didn't exactly grow, both because of Rav Schwab's opposition, and eventually Rav Schechter left that position in Paramus after 5 years, and the Paramus thing didn't really develop. But while they were in Paramus, interesting, we spoke about how they kept the Frankfurt customs. They're very strong about keeping all the Frankfurt customs. So Rav Schechter said he would discuss all the communal issues with Rav Schwab during those 5 years. Now, one of the Frankfurt customs is that the Kayanim, they do Birkas Kayanim, they duchen, even after Shkia, by Ne'ila on Yom Kippur, even if it's after sunset, they still do duchening. They still, the Kayanim still go up and give the bracha. And only in Frankfurt was that the custom. No other community did it after Shkia. And then there was a new Kayan in the community in Paramus. He didn't come from Frankfurt, and he didn't want to do it after Shkia. So Rabbi Schechter came with a compromise that they'll finish Ne'ila in time before Shkia, and they'll do Duchening, they'll do Birkas Kayanim before Shkia, and then they'll do a slow Avinu Malkeinu, and then they'll give a drasha. The rabbi, Rabbi Schechter, will give a speech, he'll give a drasha until it's dark enough to daven Meir. And he didn't have a chance to ask Rav Schwab before he did that. So afterwards, he sat down with Rav Schwab and asked him if that was the correct thing to do. Rav Schwab said, "Of course it was the correct thing to do. You did exactly the Frankfurt custom because that's what Rabbiner Hirsch did. That's what Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch did." He also struck this compromise that they finished the Ne'ila before Shkia, they had the Duchening before Shkia, and then they did Avinu Malkeinu slowly, and then Rav Hirsch would give a speech after Ne'ila. It's interesting because my wife's grandfather, who is a Yaki in Katzenstein. See, he told me that Rav Breuer gave a speech only twice a year, the main speech, not a regular shir, from the podium, to the entire community and the shul, on Shabbos Hagadol and Shabbos Shuva, which is originally the custom from Europe and in Eastern Europe also. Today changed, but and I happen to know that was the original minhag. And he said Rav Breuer would get an aliyah. That Shabbos, usually didn't give the rabbi an aliyah, but if he was speaking that Shabbos, they would give him an aliyah. I even saw him go over to the gabbai in my grandfather, in the grushul in Bayit Vigan, and it was Shabbos Hagadol, and Rav Leib Hyman was giving a drasha, the rav of the grushul, and they gave Rav Leib Hyman an aliyah, and my wife's grandfather went over to the gabbai and he said, I want to thank you for giving the rabbi an aliyah the Shabbos that he's giving his speech, because that was the custom in Frankfurt, that was the custom in KJ, and that's what Rav Breuer did, so we're keeping the Yaki customs. In any event, going back to what Rav Hirsch did, he gave this speech after Ne'ilah, and that was actually the last public speech he gave to the entire community. During the last year of his life, he gave it every year, obviously, but he died in December, so there was no Shabbos Shuvah or Shabbos Negadol after that, and so that's what Rav Schwab said. So like I said, there's this struggle to keep them in the neighborhood. And in 1980, the community, the Kehillah, sustained a serious double blow. Rav Breuer passed away at the ripe old age of 98, and the longtime president of the Kehillah, Dr. Rafael Muller, passed away. There was the degeneration of the city neighborhoods at the time, became too crowded and pricey. Eventually, there was a movement to Muncie, where they eventually, much later, opened the branch of KAJ. And in recent years, there's the rise of the YU community. There's a gentrification of the neighborhood in general. In fact, there was a thought back in the 70s even to bring in an outsider, Rabbi Chil Per, who's the Rosh Shiva of the Shiva Farakway, to become a rabbi in the Kehillah. That would be an appeal to the younger and more American community. That didn't work out. But the community is still there, and with branches and loyalties even from the people who moved out. So that's a little bit about Washington Heights, part two. And this was Yehuda Geberer with Jewish History Soundbites. You can reach me at Yehuda@YehudaGeberer.com. Geberer is GEBERER. And for questions, comments, sources, tours, and trips to places of interest in Jewish history, check out our website, YehudaGeberer.com. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter @JSoundbites, and I hope you enjoyed.